Good morning. As we read through the 8th chapter in the book of Deuteronomy, we really get a feeling, and we notice that Moses is really trying to get something across, because he points it out and really he commands it to the Israelites three times. We see in Deuteronomy 8 and verse 1, "All the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do." And in verse 6, "Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God." In verse 11, "Beware that you do not forget your Lord by not keeping his commandments and his ordinances and his statutes, which I am commanding you today." So in this chapter, where we see a whole lot of encouragement to obedience, maybe there's some things that we wouldn't really expect to be able to gain from this chapter. And the question I want to ask is faith one of them? And to that, I'll ask another question. Can you have faith without obedience? Interesting question to think about. I mean, you think some people in this world, and a lot of people do, they follow some of the commandments of God without being faithful to them, like they abstain from murder, they maybe abstain from adultery. Obviously, Jesus points out that that's can be available, that can happen for more things than we think, but, you know, in that case, people can. But can someone be faithful without being obedient? Well, if you can, I don't know a single person in the Bible who did. There are a lot of men and women of faith that are in the Bible. And were they perfect? No, they weren't. And they fell short. But was there anybody who had a disobedient life that could be called faithful? No. And we can use an example of one of these faithful men and women. We can look at Abraham, somebody that we would all consider to be faithful, and rightly so. The Bible says that he was that. Was he perfect? No, he wasn't. Only one, Christ, can claim that title. But was he faithful? Yes, he was. And one of the places where I want to draw attention to is when Abraham was first called. When God called him to a strange land that he was going to show him. What did Abraham do? He obeyed. And it's about this situation that we read in Hebrews 11, a chapter that is talking about faith, that it says in verse 8, By faith Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. So, back in Deuteronomy 8, this chapter in which there seems to be a whole lot of push towards obedience, the God that has not changed, that the same God that we worship today, that Israel did then, the same goal that he is pushing his people towards, the same goal that he has for us today, and that is faith. You can't separate the two. Now, in this 8th chapter, with the verses that we've looked at already, these three instances, Moses uses them as kind of breaks as he talks about a different topic, and we're going to look at all three of those and see what we can learn about faith looking at them. So, I'm begin reading in Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 1. "All the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to your forefathers. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. He humbled you and he let you be hungry. And he fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. Thus you are to know in your heart that the Lord your God was disciplining you, just as a man disciplines his son." Now the word that I want to draw out is here in this last verse that I read in verse 5, and that is discipline. That God was disciplining his people. Now, we can, and I guess automatically I do sometimes, when I hear the word discipline, we just think of punishment. And that Moses, in this eighth chapter, in the section that we've just read, that he is encouraging the people to remember the punishment that they just went through. And their wandering in 40 years of the wilderness was a punishment for their father's unfaithfulness. But not only can discipline mean punishment, but in our language, in the Hebrew language, in the Greek language, discipline can also mean teaching, instruction. Now, it's not always enjoyable instruction and teaching, but it has a purpose of teaching nonetheless. And I think that this is the way that Moses is intending to use it because of what we see here in verse 5, that God was disciplining you just as a man disciplines his sons. And not only that, but Moses, he states two distinct lessons that God was trying to teach, or that God was teaching his people through all of this. Number one is humility, which we see in verse 2. And then he was teaching them the ultimate lesson, the lesson that humility is rooted in. He was teaching them that they needed him. God was letting the people know they need him to survive. And what was the point in all of this? Was he just trying to make them better people? I mean, God did want his people to be good. He wanted them to be holy, even. But we read in verse 1, all the commandments that I am commanding you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may, listen to this, live. That you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land which the Lord swore to give to your forefathers. God was trying to teach them what is vital to know for life and for survival. And through this, he also was teaching them another lesson. We see in verse 2 that God was trying to find out what was in the people's hearts. But in doing that, through the trials that they were going through, he was also teaching them what was in their hearts. Who was it that was going to enter this promised land? It was going to be those that were faithful and obedient to God. And if the people were not that, they would find that out. I mean, if we were to put ourselves in a situation where we didn't have food, that would be a very revealing situation of if we were going to trust God or not and have faith in God or not. And so through their wandering in the desert, it was revealed to the people if they were going to have a heart for God or not. And if they didn't, they needed to fix that. But through these lessons that God was teaching them in humility and where their heart was, and the most important lesson, that they needed God and their dependence on God, he was teaching them all that they needed to know for their version of paradise. And the thing that we can have faith in is that very same thing, that God has taught, is teaching, will teach us all that we need to know about life and about these very same things that the Israelites were learning here, especially about our dependence on him. You see this pointed out in Hebrews 12 and verse 7. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? Now we read that and it really doesn't seem like a good thing at first. It doesn't sound good. Not really something that we want to have faith in, that God is going to discipline us. Especially when we look at this instance that we're talking about here in Deuteronomy 8 and the people wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. But Moses says it is a good thing. We see in verse 16 of Deuteronomy 8, in the wilderness he fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do good for you in the end. And back in Hebrews chapter 12, the author even points out that discipline is a form of love. We read that in verse 6. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines. Now, when we read that, we kind of maybe stare at that sentence in disbelief, and our younger self kicks in, and we're like, wait a second, no, discipline's not love. That, how can that be? Well, let's continue to read in Hebrews 12. Let's go ahead and read this section in Hebrews 12 in verse 4. Let's see if the author gives us a little bit more explanation. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our own good, so that we may share in his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it, afterwards it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Now, the author of Hebrews here lists a number of reasons of why discipline is a good thing, but the first thing that we notice and that we need to start out with is that discipline makes us his children. He asks the question, what father does not discipline his children? And that's, I guess, an answer that we can give for that is we understand today that not everybody does, and that's something that needs to be remedied. Obviously, it's an important thing. But he asks the question, what father doesn't discipline his children? And then says, God is the same way. And that makes sense. He's the one that created us. If we take on the name of his children, then he is going to teach us like his children. He is going to teach us how to be his children. And we see this again in verse 8. If you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. And I think we can look at this two different ways, and both of them are correct. If God were not to discipline us, if he were to abstain from doing that, we would not be his children. He disciplines his children. He teaches his children. He instructs his children. If we didn't have that, we would not be his children. But the other way that we can look at this is if we are not disciplined, if we do not act like his children, then we are not his children. We are illegitimate. We are not his children. And so what we can do is thank God, praise God that he does teach us, that he does teach us how to be his children. And something that we really need to be joyful in is really two things. Number one is the way that he teaches us, and number two is the ultimate lesson that he teaches us. Because we can look at this situation back in Deuteronomy chapter 8 and think, what a bad God. What a God that allows his people to go through hunger, or what a God that allows his people to go through suffering as they're going for 40 years through the wilderness. But did this people starve? Look again at verse 3 back in Deuteronomy 8. It says, he humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know. God did not let them starve. He took care of them. He took care of them every day. Did the people really suffer as they went through the wilderness those 40 years? What do we see in verse 4? Your clothing did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. God took care of them then. Their foot didn't swell for 40 years. I can't say that after a 40-minute hike. For 40 years, God took care of them. God does not just whip his children and punish them and just hope that something good comes out of that, that they come out stronger from that. But God does, he does allow his children to go through life and the struggles that go through that. He allows them to go through that, but he provides for them in that time. He provides for them not just what they need to survive, and yes, his children will survive, but he provides what they need to thrive as well. And through that teaches the most important lesson. He was not just teaching the children of Israel, you know, how to hike, you know, or how to make do with a little food. He was teaching them that they need him and that he will always be there when they need him. That he might make you understand, man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. And how well do we understand that? As we go through this life, as we go through our wandering in this life, when we go through these times where we feel like our limits are tested, one of the questions we need to ask ourselves is, hey, wait a second, have I ever starved, for example? When we go through times that seems hard to get through, like we really cannot get through them. The question that I need to ask is, has there ever been a time when I haven't been able to move forward? Thank God for that. And what is the point in all of this? What is the point of us going through this? Yes, we do grow spiritually, and that's a blessing. We do grow this spiritual endurance. We do grow in practical worldly wisdom through these things. I mean, life in a desert for 40 years will teach you some things. But most importantly, we realize we need God, and that when we need Him, which is always, He will always be there for us. And back in Hebrews, in verse 11, Hebrews 12 and verse 11, the author gives us some encouragement, because is discipline, is instruction, is it always enjoyable? Well, no, of course not. And he says that in verse 11. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. But what I want to pull out of this for just a second in verse 11 is this word moment. Because any trial that we go through in this grand scheme of things, when we look at the scheme of eternity, that trial is not even a fraction of that, of a moment. And what is it that happens to moments? What has happened to every single moment that you have known in this life? It passes. Every time. And any moment of trial that we go through, any moment of instruction that we go through, it passes. And then what? Is it nothing? Is it pointless? Are we going to get through that and just yield heartache and sorrow? No. At the end of verse 11, all discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrow. Yet to those who have been trained for it afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness. Backing up to verse 9, shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? And forward to verse 10, He disciplines us for our good, so that we may share in His holiness, righteousness, life, holiness. Can we look at these three things and say, discipline's not really worth it? I can't. And what is the outcome of these three things? Well, let's move on to the next section in Deuteronomy 8 in verse 6. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God, to walk in His ways and to fear Him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks, of water, of fountains and springs, flowing forth in valleys and hills. A land of wheat and barley, of vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land where you will eat food without scarcity, in which you will not lack anything, a land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills you can dig copper. When you have eaten and are satisfied, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land which He has given you. God is bringing this people, the people of Israel, into a land, and it's a land of plenty, to say the least. It's plenty of water, plenty of food. It is plenty of everything. And really, not just plenty, in abundance. They have an abundance of everything that they could ever need. And God has given His stamp of assurance that they're going to get there. And He does the same for us. And what we can have faith in is that He is going to get us to a place that's worth getting to. We read Jesus' words in John 14, starting in verse 1. Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house there are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. For I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Now in the context of this, Jesus is talking to His apostles, but you can't get through the New Testament without realizing that He has a place for us as well. A prepared place for us as well. And in Revelation 22 and 21 and 22, that's kind of the equivalent of what we just read here in Deuteronomy chapter 8. Instead of saying this physical springs of water that Moses is talking about here, we have the river of life. In that new heaven and new earth, we enter a land where we literally do not lack in anything. And in fact, the only thing that we will lack in is tears and sorrow. In this new heaven and new earth, there are going to be hills, instead of hills of copper and hills of iron, there's going to be streets of gold. So why come here to John 14 instead of going there? I think partly is because we know that. We understand when Jesus says, I'm going to prepare a place for you. We have this idea of it, although I do want to stress that it's a very imperfect idea of it. But really, I want to come here for this sentence, or for this phrase. I go to prepare a place for you. Those two words, for you. It is not just that God has prepared through His Son this perfect place. He has prepared perfection, but it's not just that. It's that it is for us. For you. You have your very own home. You have your very own place. And it's not a place that you got to pay mortgage on. It's not a place that you got to pay taxes on. It's already been paid for with the blood of Christ. And it's a prepared place. And we don't take that to mean that Jesus left to decorate for us. Jesus, in His leaving, and all that entailed with that, and going back to the Father, He opened the way for us to be there too. And if it's a prepared place for us, what is going to stop us from getting there? The Israelites at this time in their history in Deuteronomy 8, they still have a little bit more time to go. They're not in the promised land yet. They've still got some moving forward to do. They've got some battles that they're going to face. But was the peace that they were going to have in this land, was that ever a doubt? Well, if they were faithful, absolutely not. That was assured to them. And it is the same for us. We've got a lot of, we're not in the promised land yet either. We've got a lot of battles to face. We've got a lot of enemies to face. But the greatest battle, the battle against Satan and against our biggest enemy, death, has already been won. And so if we have faith, nothing can stop us. Nothing can defeat us. But is it going to be our strength that wins those battles? We've seen a trend here in these first two points that it is God who gives the instruction. It is God who's going to get the people to the promised land. So should there be anybody who is part of the Israelites who would sit there and listen to Moses and say, you know, I'm so glad that I'm so strong. I'm so glad that I'm going to get me into the promised land. That'd be ridiculous. And that's what Moses is pointing out from verse 11 and on. Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping His commandments and His ordinances and His statutes which I am commanding you today. Otherwise, when you have eaten and are satisfied and have built good houses and lived in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and your silver and gold multiplies and all that you have multiplies, then your heart will become proud. And you will forget the Lord your God who has brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. He led you through the great and terrible wilderness with its fiery serpents and scorpions and thirsty ground where there was no water. And He brought water for you out of the rock of flint. In the wilderness He fed you manna, which your fathers did not know, that He might humble you and that He might test you to do good for you in the end. Otherwise, you may say in your heart, my power and the strength of my hand has made me this wealth. But you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is He who is giving you the power to make wealth, that He may confirm His covenant, which He has swore to your fathers, as it is this day. It shall come about, if you ever forget the Lord your God and go after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you today that you will surely perish. Like the nations that the Lord makes to perish before you, so you shall perish, because you would not listen to the voice of the Lord your God. What we can have faith in, should have faith in, is not in our own strength. And in fact, that's discouraged. But we can have faith in God's strength. Now, it's hard, it may be hard as we look at this section to think that it really applies to us. Obviously, Moses is kind of fast-forwarding to when the people are in the promised land here, and we're not in heaven yet. But again, I ask, when is it that Israel received this promise, or this command? It was when they were still outside of the promised land. Again, just like I mentioned in the last point, they still had a lot of moving forward to do. They still had a lot of battles to be faced, and if they looked at any of these battles, at any of the enemies that they faced, at any of the strongholds that they faced, at any of the giants that they faced, if they looked at these things and said, how is it that I'm going to do this? The answer is, how have they done it all along? Was it their strength? No. It was God's. And if we find ourselves afraid in our lives, if we're looking at any stronghold, if we're looking at any enemy, if we're looking at any obstacle to overcome, and we ask, how is it that I'm going to be able to do this? Even though we may think that we're not strong enough, God is. And we can rely on His strength. But not only is this section able to be applied in this way, but also, you know, our lives, they kind of resemble what He's describing here for the Israelites. I mean, has there been a day that we've gone without food? Obviously, that may be the case for some of us, but I think most of us are pretty well taken care of. I think most of us are pretty well taken care of with a house to live in. Most of us are pretty well taken care of with a multiplication of blessings from God. Not only that, but we have peace. I mean, we look at Israel as this fast-forwarding point, as they're in the promised land, they're going to be at peace. We have peace. We have peace in Christ, the greatest peace that there can be. We also have a peace in life. We have a peace in life that comes with righteousness. We kind of talked about this morning in class. You look at the people that live lives of unrighteousness, and they do not have peace. Some of the celebrities in the news who have been living unrighteous lives all of their life, and some of that has been in public, some of that has been in private, and some of these private things are coming out now, and their life is crumbling. Righteousness has peace from that. So because we have these things, we have these blessings in our life, we're pretty well taken care of in most things. We have this peace. I have to ask the question, are we immune to this feeling of looking around at us, looking at our life, looking at our job, looking at all of these things, and are we immune from thinking that that's because of my effort? Are we immune from thinking that it's always going to be our hard work and effort that's going to keep these things? We see in this section that we've read, we can envision a people that look around at their life, and they look around at their houses, and they look around at their gardens and their vineyards, and they look around at all of these things, and they have pride, right? And they say, look at what my hands have done. And I do think that we need to look around. We do need to look around at our home, and we do need to look around at our family, and we do need to look around at our job, and we do need to look around at the things that we've accomplished. We need to look around at maybe the graduations that we've gone to, and the projects that we've accomplished, and the fences that we've built, and the dinners that we've cooked. We need to look around at all of this. But we need to, as Moses points out in verse 18, we need to remember the Lord our God. Because God has laid multiple foundations for us in this life in which success is built. God created the foundation of creation when He created this world and all of the works that can be done in it. God created the foundation of man when He breathed into man life and all of the things that man can do. He created the foundation of you when He specifically created you and who you are, and your attributes and your abilities and all the things that you can do. And the greatest foundation of all that is available to anybody who wants it, He has laid the foundation of Christ, which brings life and strength into everything. And we can build as hard as we want on these foundations. But also something to make sure is that we remember is that God is also supplying most of the building material in this. So we look at all of this, we look at our life, we look at the things around us, we look at our jobs, we look at our families, and all of these things, and we should have pride when we look at it, but not in ourselves. We should look at it and say, you know what, without God, I would not be anything. Where would we be without God? So my encouragement this morning is really the same one that Moses has, and the same one that he repeats three times. Therefore, you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in His ways and to fear Him. This is not an idea that changes as we come in from the Old Testament to the New Testament. Jesus said in John 14:15, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. In Matthew 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus, when talking about the law, he says, you heard that it was said, and then does he end that sentence with, but I say you don't have to worry about that. Jesus said, do not be lustful. Shortening that down a lot. Do not be adulterous. Do not be angry people. Do not be prideful people. Jesus said to be holy people. And we look at that and we say, man, that's hard. And it is hard. You know what? 40 years in the wilderness, that's not a piece of cake. Life is hard. We go through some hard things. It is hard. But it is not our power that is going to get us there. It is God. And it is Christ. And he has assured us that he will get us there. Not only that, but he's assured us that he will help us to grow and instruct us and to discipline us through that time. We just need to have faith. And if you need to begin that walk with God and faith in him through Christ this morning, be baptized in Christ, please come forward. Always standing as we stand.